reconvene. We're on paper five.
Thank you.
Yes. Agenda paper five discusses two issues relating to the recognition of deferred tax assets when an entity is loss-making. The first issue is whether IS-12 requires that a deferred tax asset is recognized regardless of an entity's expectations of future tax losses, when there are suitable reversing taxable temporary differences. The second one is how the guidance in IS-12 should be applied when the tax laws limit the recovery of tax losses to a certain portion of taxable profits each year. In January, the committee tentatively decided not to add these issues to its agenda because it noted that the guidance in IS-12 on the recognition and measurement of deferred tax asset is sufficiently clear. We received 5 comment letters on this tentative agenda decision. 3 respondents agreed that the committee should not add this issue to its agenda. 1 respondent thinks that the tentative agenda decision implicitly includes an interpretation rather than a clarification. Consequently, the respondent suggests including this issue in a wider project that should address all issues related to determining taxable profit. We disagree with this comment because we think that the tentative agenda decision answers the question raised by the submitter without interpreting how taxable profit should be determined. Another respondent does not support the decision on issue 2. They think that this decision is inconsistent with the tentative decision on issue 1. We think that the two decisions are not inconsistent because the first one says that future tax losses are not considered, but does not say that tax law limitation should not be considered. Consequently, we recommend that the committee should finalize its decision not to add this issue to its agenda. Our proposed changes are in Appendix A of the paper. We ask the committee member whether they agree with our recommendation and if they have any comments on the wording of the final agenda decision.
Okay, as I understand it, we believe, or the staff believes, that we can consider this issue independent of the work Thomas is doing on his issues.
Yes.
Okay. Thomas, you agree with that? Okay. Comments on the paper and the decision. What is it about this? What is it about Leo? You guys would argue about what direction the sun's coming up with tomorrow. And he brings it, yeah. Oh, okay. Five A.
Okay.
Okay.
I still have, well, a challenge with the wording. I mean, we say that the restriction is limited to a specified percentage of the taxable profit of that year. What we do not say is whether this carry forward is unlimited to a specific time period or not. So from a situation where you have an unlimited tax loss carry forward, however, you are only allowed to recognize a certain percentage year by year, this probably would help to understand the conclusion. I still have a challenge to understand the conclusion because we say if you have a DTA, look at your DTL, whether your existing DTL is sufficient, irrespective of whether the company would be loss-making in the future, well, more or less to an unlimited time period. And if I would have a tax loss carry forward, I would account for this tax loss carry forward as a deferred tax asset because I say I have an existing DTL. I have an existing DTL, irrespective of whether I'm loss making in the future, yes or no. On the other hand, when I'm in the same situation, but only tax law limits it to 60%, but more or less it is unlimited so that I could use my tax loss carry forward, then we say we have to limit the DTA to restrict it by 60%. And this is, well, conceptually, in a way, broken. Because more or less at the same situation for the company, it is loss-making, and I have no idea when it turns to become profitable again. Although, in the first case, I'm able to recognize my DTA. The second case, I'm limited to this certain percentage set by tax law. And there I still struggle.
Okay, I'm not sure that I previously appreciated a distinction I think you've made. Situation one would be a case in which you could never deduct more than 60% of a loss arising in a particular situation. So if the loss was 100, there would never, ever, ever be a deduction for more than 60. In the second case, the loss is 100, and you could deduct 60 next year, and the remaining 40 the year after that.
You would have to have had income of 160 to deduct 100.
Well, and that would be a third possibility. So
it's the same.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of what you think about income.
Turns. Let's say if we got a temporary difference of 100 and it turns next year, you can only deduct 60. Because the entity is loss-making, there are no more profits. So the fact you've got 40 of losses becomes irrelevant. There are no more profits. You don't book the DTA. If the temporary difference turns at a rate of 1 a year for 100 years, you'll get to deduct 60 cents. But there is no way without there being future profits
to get the other 40.
You will ever recover the 40. So I think
the difference.
I think the timing in this example is actually a red herring.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Okay. Now all of a sudden everybody wants to talk. Tony, are you through or are you?
I'm done.
We're all gonna say the same thing. No, I was gonna say the same thing.
I am still wanting a question about the
decision. When we go to page number 6, there in the middle, it states the Interpretations Committee noted that according to paragraph 28, etc. At the end of the first bullet, we state that consequently future tax losses are not considered, and after the second bullet, we do not include that sentence. And I was wondering what's the reason for that, because I couldn't find out. Or should you take into account the future tax losses are not considered as well in after the second situation?
Which paragraph?
I was going to say, we're on page 6, but I don't know where exactly.
Page 6?
7.
It's the text of the proposed wording.
Oh, okay.
And then in the middle, it states the Interpretations Committee noted that according to paragraph 28 and 35 of IS 12, and then you get three dots. You found it? And then the last sentence of the first dot is consequently future tax losses are not considered, and I agree on that. And after the second bullet, that sentence is not there, and that might create the impression that then future tax losses are to be considered. So I was wondering why that sentence was not added to the second bullet as well.
Bill? Any objection to adding it?
We cannot.
We'll add it. Thank you. What, if anything, do we want to do to respond to the question that that Martin raised? Or have we already sufficiently discussed it?
I think you run the risk of making the agenda decision more complicated if we try to add more words. And my sense is most of the folks around the table are in the same place.
And Martin, was your point the same one that was raised by the German Standard Setter? Yeah, okay. Scott?
No, I was just going to say, I thought that we've taken care of it, at least, I hope, now.
Okay. Then I think we have an agenda decision.
Agenda paper 5A. Agenda paper 5A discusses a request for guidance on the recognition of an asset in a situation in which the tax position of an entity is uncertain. The issue is whether IS-12 and a probable threshold is applied to recognize an asset where an entity has paid cash to the tax authority but expects to recover that cash, or whether the guidance in IS-37 and a virtually certain threshold should be applied. In January, the committee tentatively decided not to add this issue to its agenda because it observed that IS-12 provides sufficient guidance on the recognition of current tax assets and liabilities, and that in the specific fact pattern described by the submitter, an asset is recognized if the amount of cash paid, which is a certain amount, exceeds the amount of tax expected to be due, which is an uncertain amount. We received 10 comment letters on this tentative agenda decision. 5 respondents agreed that the committee should not add this issue to its agenda. However, many respondents noted that this issue is widespread and that there is divergence in practice. So they are concerned about addressing this issue with non-authoritative guidance. We understand their comment, and we think that this fact pattern would be better considered within the context of a broader project on uncertain tax positions. In our view, this project should be addressed the recognition and measurement of assets and liabilities on uncertain tax position, and should also address the inconsistency between the requirements of IS-37 and IS-12. Consequently, we recommend that the committee should finalize its decision not to add this issue to its agenda. However, we think that the committee should recommend to the ISB to address the accounting for uncertain tax position in its research project on income taxes. The proposed changes to the wording of the tentative agenda decision are in Appendix A of the paper. We ask the committee member if they agree with our recommendation and if they have any comments on the final proposed wording.
Point of information, Julie, can you put on your SEC hat for a minute? If I recall, the absence of specific guidance in IFRSs on uncertain tax positions has been a concern of some in the chief accountant's office for quite some time. Question mark. They've raised it, I think, in some reports and letters and things.
I'd say yes, but not a daily. It's not
a daily issue. It's,
yeah,
just
it's
a
not front and
question
all
about
the time.
Differences then.
Yeah, but it's not. I don't want to overstate it.
Okay, point taken. Tony?
I guess I wonder with this one whether we can be a bit more helpful to people. I understand that there is diversity in practice, and I understand there are some aspects of uncertain tax positions, particularly around measurement, where you might say there isn't very much guidance. But there is diversity, and I wonder whether pushing it to the research agenda is pushing it out into the very dim and distant future, and so nothing's going to come along to address it. And so I was thinking, well, could we say something that's a bit more positive? And I'd work with a couple of sort of explicit pieces of the standard. Uncertain tax positions are income taxes. IS-12 says explicitly it applies to income taxes. IS-37 says explicitly it does not apply to income taxes. And so that to me is explicit. And I know some people say, well, there's a tension between the two standards. Well, there is. They're different standards. One looks at income taxes, one looks at provisions. So I think it's probably way beyond our scope to think about the differences between the two. But what we could do is say the standards are pretty clear. Income taxes, therefore uncertain tax positions, are in IAS 12. Maybe there are some broader issues around the measurement of uncertain tax positions that the board could think about. But this, that would be, if you like, a positive step that would help people and reduce diversity in the short term. And then the broader measurement question is something that would come along in the future.
Now, I turn to my colleague here, as I seem to at every meeting. Where are we with 12 on the research agenda?
Well, that's 12 and 37, actually. But 12 is in the slow burn category.
Slow burn.
Slow burn. It's not likely to be discussed by our board until after 2015 in any form. That's in the, not the never nevers, but it's certainly, it's a long way out. So. And 37 is linked to the conceptual framework. So if you were to think about it in terms of the context of 37, we're waiting for the conceptual framework, and then we'll have a look at both recognition and measurement of that liabilities if it's relevant there.
Okay. Let's just, I've got Laurence and Scott, and then Martin. And Andrew.
I fully agree with what Tony has said, and I didn't like the proposed redrafting of the agenda decision by the staff. And I do agree that for recognition purposes, it's quite clear that it is in the scope of IS 12, and we should state so, and that the issue is measurement, and agree here that there is no guidance about how do you do measurement. So I completely agree going to that direction, and if I can reiterate what I had said when I was not voting for IFRIC 21, that I believe that there is a broader issue about how to account for taxes paid to the tax authorities, whether they are scoped in IS 37 or IS 12. This gives rise to anomalies or to differences, and that this topic warrants to be looked at comprehensively.
You're nothing if not consistent. I'll give you that. Scott?
I too was hoping we could be a little bit more helpful, but you know, perhaps the issue that's bothering me is indeed the one we've agreed we can't answer. I'm not sure that. The question we were asked was about a payment made to the tax authorities while we're in a dispute with them, basically. Tax authority says we owe 100, we say we owe 0, we have to pay 100, and then we continue discussing. And the question asked was whether the 100 that we paid is now subject to IAS 12 or 37. To evaluate whether there's an asset there. And I thought that we had concluded last time we discussed this that essentially whether you made a payment or not shouldn't wind up changing the amount of tax expense you record, because your tax expense is based on where you think come out applying the threshold, the recognition thresholds in IAS 12. The redraft of the agenda decision has taken that out. And basically, I think, leaves open that maybe the fact that you had to make a payment will impact the amount of tax expense you recognize, even though it doesn't affect your assessment of how this thing is going to come out. I didn't see anything that caused me to change my mind on that, so I was hoping we could find a way, and I think the way Tony suggested would do this, to say, you have asked us whether making a payment
essentially affects the income statement. It doesn't, because that payment and the tax uncertainty are all part of IAS 12. And so having made a payment doesn't have to change. It doesn't cause you to go from thinking about it in terms of IAS 12 recognition to thinking about it in terms of IAS 37, and thereby saying you lose, you can never recognize the asset.
Andrew, and then Martin.
I agree with others who've spoken so far. I feel that this, I fully agree we shouldn't take this onto the agenda, but that this redrafted agenda decision seems something of a backward step. We've gone from providing some guidance to providing no guidance and suggesting it goes onto the research agenda. The deleted second paragraph refers to sufficient guidance. Now, whether IAS 12 does contain sufficient guidance, I guess, is a matter of taste. I'm possibly in a minority here, but I personally think maybe it does contain sufficient guidance, but that could be confirmed or denied in the future. But there is some guidance, which is that it's inside the scope, and I think we're all agreed on that. Scott mentioned that the question is whether the submission asks whether making a payment in advance changes the tax charge, and I agree that was part of the question, and we agreed that it doesn't make a difference. But the submitter also asked about how to deal with the uncertainty. And paragraph 46 of IAS 12 says that you measure in accordance with the tax laws. So I think that, although we haven't really discussed detection risk, that does to me address the detection risk piece and says that you don't reduce the amount of the expense for the possibility of detection, even though in this case detection has already taken place by definition. So IAS, if we're in the scope and we know that that piece of the measurement is not relevant, that's quite a bit of guidance.
Martin?
I agree with Scott, Tony, and Andrew. I was a little bit surprised and so to say disappointed about the suggested final agenda decision wording. So I would also suggest to read it or to write it in a better manner with a closer link to IRS 12 and explaining that the fact of the payment itself does not have any further accounting consequences. On the other hand, I believe we are not able to solve the issues with regard to other taxes, because currently we have an inconsistency that might be that for other taxes we are more carefully spoken related to IRS 37 with other consequences, which I do not really like, to be honest, but this then would probably be part of a broader project, together with questions if some money is put in an escrow account for any other business reasons, and what are the effects then considering the overall probability to get the money back, and whether this is then joint control, and all these issues which come up in practice and which are challenging in practice, so to say, as more or less you do not really find a detailed, well, rule or principle for it. But with regard to this case here, I would suggest to reword the agenda decision wording.
Before I go to John, Leo, it must have seemed like a good idea at the time to take this language out. Would you remind us again why you were proposing to take it out?
To me, the technical conclusion is correct. The problem is that there is divergence in practice on this. And so the concern is that we are, the tool, in my view, is wrong. So the technical conclusion to me is correct, but we are saying you should do this with an agenda decision when in some jurisdiction they apply IAS 37. This is the problem.
So we're essentially changing.
I agree with IAS 12. I agree with
proposing a significant change in practice through an agenda decision.
Yes, this is
okay. John?
I was just going to comment that the technical analysis, I think, is correct, as we discussed at the last meeting. But my only point is, in trying to be helpful, is it particularly helpful to deal with just part of the issue? And it seems to me on certain tax positions is a much bigger issue. So by being helpful in terms of treatment of these payments, but ignoring the issues regarding measurement, are we being partially helpful in a way that ends up being unhelpful? I think the other issue is the diversity in practice that has to be acknowledged. I mean, there is very significant diversity in practice around, you know, in some jurisdictions it's quite very common to apply IAS 37 to these as contingent assets. In other ones it's very common to apply IAS 12. And it does tend to be jurisdictional rather than entity based in my experience. So again, in trying to be helpful, are we being less than helpful? Would be my challenge, but I don't disagree with the technical analysis. I mean, I think that it's more about whether we say that and the consequence of how people handle it.
Okay, I'm going to work my way down the line, Scott.
One of the reasons I would like to clarify that making the payment doesn't change your tax expense is to relieve pressure from the argument with the tax authorities on whether you need to make that advance payment during the dispute, and also to make sure we don't wind up in a situation where a company can time when it records what is essentially the tax expense. I've got to make a payment. I can make it December 20th, in which case I will not be allowed to book the asset, so I'm going to have to recognize the expense. Or I can wait until January 5th, and then the expense will fall in the next period. That seems like a bad idea, and it also seems like a bad idea to put a company in a position where it needs to fight making the payment to the tax authorities because of the financial reporting impact, rather than because it might actually affect the outcome of the tax dispute. So I actually was thinking that if we were in agreement on that, that making that clarification would make life easier for everybody.
Laurence?
Oh, I was trying to think through the reasons Aleo gave us for proposing changes to the agenda decisions, to which I continue to disagree with. I was thinking, yes, this, if we go back and clarify S12 applies, indeed there will be consequences for some, raising the question, was prior treatment an error, or just is it going just to be a change in accounting policy? I know these types of criticisms all the time. If we were to go for an annual improvement, to clarify just to state clearly that uncertain tax positions are within the scope of IAS 12 and explaining basis for conclusion that at this stage we are not proposing to give further guidance, it's just a clarification, and then to deal with the issue, ISB will look at it when it looks at a comprehensive review of IAS 12.
Michael?
Leo explained why we had made the changes that you saw in the paper, and the additional information we got about the diversity in practice and the depth of that. I think if we were to, you know, if the committee was to decide to propose some form of standard setting action in response to this, given the what we've already learned about the diversity in practice and the depth of that, I would suggest that an annual improvement wouldn't be the right forum for that, because of it's fairly contentious. What I would perhaps suggest instead is this is about, in a way, so which standard applies and how to apply that standard, what effects that standard has on things like the tax charge when you make a payment, and perhaps a short interpretation could achieve the clarification that you'd like to achieve, but by doing it as a separate interpretation rather than part of an annual improvement, it gets the visibility which I think an issue like this would deserve, given the, you know, it's not often we get 10 comment letters on an agenda decision. I think that's something that we should take into account as well.
The idea of small, fast interpretations has already come up once. comment on core inventories. That's an issue that we'll be talking about more in some of our administrative discussions. But this would, I agree with Michael, this can't, given this depth of the diversity in practice, the same reason we think it can't be an agenda decision would also be a reason why it can't be an annual improvement. Tony?
I've got to endorse what
Scott said, and also observe that the measurement issue is there. I don't think we're making the measurement issue any worse if we clarify that these are the recognition and whatever is in IS 12, and making a payment doesn't change the tax expense, because if before you make the payment you have an uncertain tax position, you have to measure it. So that,
yeah,
what we're saying doesn't change that. It's already there, and I just sense with this one that it's unusual to get 10 comment letters, I agree, but I've not heard any dissent about the technical answer around the table. 6 out of 10 of the comment letters agreed with the technical answer. I know one suggested putting it onto the agenda in some way, but agreed with the technical answer. And so we have sort of a clear view on the technical answer, which just seems to me to give us enough ammunition to go ahead with an agenda decision with maybe some tweaks to the wording, rather than holding it up.
Reinhardt?
I agree with the technical analysis, but I am troubled by the diversity in practice and whether an agenda decision is the right way to go, given it's non-authoritative. So I would have thought it meets one of the important criteria for whether it goes on the on our project list for as an interpretation. And so I would be in favor of that as opposed to an agenda decision, given the diversity. I think in any event, even if we went with an agenda decision, the wording would have to be substantially tweaked, in the sense that I've had a number of people comment to me that when they read this draft agenda decision, they couldn't tell whether we were saying IS 37 or IS 12 applied. We didn't clearly say which is which. And so I think that's a problem, because I don't think that would change any of the diversity.
Martin, last call.
I believe this argument that we have diversity in practice and therefore that we are afraid, say, to give an explicit guidance is not really an argument. So if we are clear on the technical side, I think in a way we should publish that. I'm able to understand that, well, probably an interpretation would be the, well, smartest way to introduce or to shift in a way this diversity and give constituents a little bit longer time of transferring their accounting to, well, the technical correct accounting. So therefore, I mean, I would agree on an interpretation. I would even agree to be a little bit more explicit on the wording, but again, with this wording we gained nothing, and well, from the outside it looks that we were too afraid to be explicit.
Chagmo?
Yes, I agree with the discussions. This is a very good technical analysis, but things IASB has some kind of maybe mistake maybe some years ago, because at the time maybe 2000 ED on the IS 12, we said that at the time the recognition of issue on this uncertain tax position is silent in IS 12. So many countries are looking at those papers. So they decided that some country took a very prudent approach. So you cannot recognize any asset if you are not virtually certain that based on the IS 37. So it depends on jurisdiction culture. So some countries are more liberal. So you can choose. You can recognize any asset if it's probable. So this kind of issue is quite, you know, tricky issue. Maybe this issue might be maybe if you see it from the perspective of public interest, so and the diversity of the all countries, so we should be somewhat careful to make a decision about this recognition issue of assets. It regardless of this is a investment default tax, it doesn't matter because we have some kind of made some mistake. So this is this issue is more an issue must be discussed between the committee here and the board also. Maybe the board maybe have some saying, would like to say something because this is quite tricky issue. That's what I'm saying. So I'm saying, you know, the committee might be very prudent, you know, cautious in making a final recommendation or decision.
Couple of points here. I'm not sure we're sissies. It's not that we're afraid, but it does seem to me that there's broad agreement that using 37 as your justification for saying tax expense is 100% of any payment made is the wrong answer. More importantly, I don't think if I were a regulator in Antarctica, to pick a country, I would need 37. I would reach the judgment that in the conditions and circumstances in the regulatory environment in 37, or in Antarctica, excuse me, if you make a payment, you can kiss it goodbye. It's gone. And so if I were a regulator, I would say, well, in my circumstances, given the way the taxing authority behaves in Antarctica, that money is history, it's tax expense. And I wouldn't need 37 to reach that conclusion. I could make it under 12.
You'd say that the fact that the tax regulator has said they think the laws say you owe this money means that it is probable you owe it.
Yeah, well,
regardless of payment.
Regardless, and
but again, that would be saying that payment is not the issue.
Right.
It's that the tax regulator said,
regulators
here's
ability,
how the law works, you guys did it wrong.
Yeah, the tax regulator's ability to impose in that jurisdiction, that's something we can never get away from.
Right.
But I don't need 37 to get me to that answer. So that would still say that we could strike a blow for truth and justice with a mini interpretation. I take the point now. So that first question is, do we pursue the idea of a little tiny interpretation that says, don't look at 37. If it's an income tax, it's always in 12, which we can interpret. We can't interpret the measurement because there ain't any guidance in 12 on the measurement. Mm-hmm. We tried to put it in, but that exposure draft never got finalized. So that's the first alternative. The second alternative is to attempt to redraft the agenda decision. So given that I haven't yet defined what a mini interpretation is, so taking it on faith, how many would prefer a mini interpretation? That's a clear majority. Okay. That's what we will pursue. Leo, fortunately, won't have to pursue it, right? This is his last meeting with us. So.
Unfortunately.
You really want to? We can arrange.
Well done, Leo.
I know. We recorded that.
We know a guy. Okay. Michael, what's up next?